If you're listening to this on headphones, I'd like you to try the following experiment, please, if you don't mind. I'd like you to listen to the program. Listen attentively, listen to it properly, soak it all in through your pores and through your ears and through your hair follicles. Can you take stuff in through your hair follicles? Wait a minute. Hair follicles. That's where the hair pushes out through very slowly, isn't it? So it's unlikely that you have an empty hair follicle just open and available for input. I suppose that's just as well, because the hair follicles aren't going to lead anywhere that you want stuff to go into. What comes in through your hair follicles? Nothing. Your hair is expanding out through it. It's just expanding to take up more space. It's not moving. I suppose you could argue that the end of each hair is moving outwards, but we all know it's not really. That's like saying when your child is growing that their head is moving upwards towards the sky. If you have a child and you said, one day I want to go to the moon, you don't say, oh, every day that you grow, look at this, I'll show you this chart. You put a ice chart on the back of the door and you measure your child every week, which a lot of people do. But you don't tell them, look, you're another inch closer to the moon. You're literally an astronaut right now. Now, at one point when you get to about 20, you're going to have to go, I've gone as far towards the moon as I can. I need to get a job with NASA or Elon Musk to bring me the rest of the way. It's a bit like, there was a sitcom in the 1970s or 80s called Taxi. Had Danny DeVito, your man out of Dear John, Tony, what's his name, who's in other things where he's always called Tony. Who else? Your man who grew up to be dead, who plays all the jokes on people. What's his name? Ah, you know your man. Taxi was this American situation comedy. It was about a taxi office. Danny DeVito used to go around shouting at the drivers. If they had all been independent taxi drivers and not being part of that firm, they didn't have mobile phones in those days, for one thing. You can't be just driving one car and having a full-time receptionist who takes bookings. And the same is true of going to the moon. Your child may make a lot of progress going to the moon during the first 20 years of its life. You know, it sounds like I'm patronising your child. Say your child is 3 feet tall when it first starts talking about wanting to be an astronaut and go to the moon. And then it grows another 3 feet. That means it's made 50% progress. It's 50% closer to the moon than it was. That's progress. All I'm saying is that when it gets to about 20, it's going to have to sign up to be part of some organisation that can invest in space rockets and mission control centres and all of that. Unless, by the time your child gets to 20, we all have flying space cars. I suppose that's possible. But they told us when we were children, we'd all have flying cars. And where are they? Where are the flying cars? I don't see any. Do you see any flying cars? No, you do not. You don't see any flying cars. And it's not because they're up so high you can't see them. No, it's because they're just not there. Or they are there, but only rich people have them and we don't. And you're probably saying, nobody said we'd all have flying cars. Well, yes, they did. Every book I read as a child said we'd have flying cars. And you'd have these tablets that you look at programs on and no buttons on, just tap the screen. It's like you would prod someone in the face if you're trying to annoy them. You go prodding them, you go, hey, you. If you're prodding someone like that, you'd probably prod them in the chest. You wouldn't prod them in the face. That'd be a bit much, unless you were a child. If you were a very annoying child, I think if you're going to prod someone in the vein of going, hey, you, you'd prod them in the chest. Don't do it too hard, though. I'm doing it to me now. I'm prodding myself in the breastbone. That's a bit painful, I have to say. Don't do that. It's also rather annoying, more importantly. I suppose that's why they do it. When you're young, you think annoying people is going to get you anywhere. It's not. Don't annoy people. Don't annoy people. You're putting people on the wrong side of you. No, don't annoy people. I don't know if you've noticed, I just had a huge coughing fit between saying don't annoy people and no, don't annoy people. You probably can tell from my voice, can you? A residue of, a vague sense of, that's a voice that coughed a moment ago, but I didn't hear a cough. What's that about? I edit it out so I don't deafen you. And you have this in your ears. You're on some train somewhere in some hellhole dungeon of an underground train system, possibly. Jammed in against other commuters in beside the doors. Move down the middle of the carriage, please. And you're saying, I can't move down the middle of the carriage. If I could move of my own accord, I wouldn't be on public transport. Oh no. Eldah announced her to shut up. Oh, anyway, you hear me over your earphones. You don't want to hear a big hacking cough. No. So I edit that out. I'm also aware that it sounds like I must have been coughing. Either that or I'm doing something weird with my mouth. What would I be doing with my mouth that's weird other than making this podcast? What would I do with my mouth that's weird? I suppose we'll cover that in the other segment later, because there's a segment I've already recorded where I'm talking about the importance of the mouth and the things we do with it. I don't want to preempt myself with that, so we'll leave it there. We won't go any further on the mouth for the moment. We won't go any further into the mouth at the moment. The tap dripping in the next room, the ensuite bathroom of this room, in fact, which some would argue is part of this room. I suppose if you can think of this bedroom plus its ensuite bathroom as a suite. Wait, I just realised that's why it's called ensuite, because it's part of a suite. That's the first time I've ever realised. That's fascinating. Since 2006, I've lived in houses to each have at least one, but not more than one, bedroom that has an ensuite bathroom. It's only just now occurred to me that a bedroom plus an ensuite bathroom amounts to a suite. It does, it amounts to a suite. Not a particularly fancy one, maybe. Well, it's a bedroom with an ensuite bathroom is a suite, and that's why it's called ensuite, because it's part of a suite. Did you call the bedroom an ensuite bedroom as well, because it's part of a suite? If you make the ensuite bathroom fancy enough, then the bathroom could be the main room of the suite. You want a bathroom suite that has its own bedroom attached. Because I like to spend all day in the bathroom. So long, in fact, that sometimes I like to go and have a rest. Halfway through my bathroom ablutions, I like to go into the ensuite bedroom and have a lie down. That's the type of bathroom you want. You don't want a bathroom that's just an afterthought attached to a bedroom. No. You want a bathroom that's a suite in itself. There's a door leading from the bathroom into a bedroom that's there solely for people who are pampering themselves with a bathroom day. And sometimes you have a nice little break and go in and have a rest in the ensuite bedroom. You might have a kitchenette as well then. One door would lead into the bedroom and another door would lead into a little kitchen. And the kitchen would be where you go to get proper fresh drinking water from the kitchen sink, because you're not disgusting and stupid and reckless enough to wash your mouth out with water that comes from the same tap you wash the shit off your hands with. You don't want to die. If you're spending your whole day in the bathroom as a treat, you obviously care about things like that. There's a good chance you spent 80% of that day just washing your hands. And it's not that you don't enjoy it, you're having a great time. But you also know that after you brush your teeth and stuff, you're not going to rinse your mouth out with water. In fact, you're not even going to. I don't know if this is normal, but when I'm brushing my teeth, I hold the toothbrush under the tap first to wet it. Now, nobody's ever told me to do that, but I've always assumed that's something you do. You wet it first. Same thing you do when you're washing your hair. When you're washing your hair, you're not supposed to just put a blob of shampoo on your hair and then put on the water as an afterthought. No, you wet your hair first. You wet your hair first. And if you're going to do that to your own hair, surely you do the same to the head of a toothbrush that's going to go into your mouth. And this could have been anywhere. No, you wet that first so it can soak up the paste properly and activate it before you put it anywhere near your mouth. You're going to put that goddamn thing anywhere near your mouth, especially inside it. No, you want to make sure it's had a proper chance to soak in all the paste properly. You wet it first, but you don't use water from the tap, because that's the tap where you wash the shit off your hands. Your bathroom needs an ensuite kitchen. I know you're thinking maybe you could just have a bottled water for that purpose. Well, that sounds a bit extravagant for one thing. And for another, are you going to keep that in the bathroom, the same place where you shit? No, I don't think so. That would defeat the purpose. So no, you have to have the kitchen and you keep the water in the fridge in there. Or maybe not in the fridge. Actually, now that you mentioned it, a fridge is the last place you want to keep drinking water or anything else that you're going to put into your body. If there's germs in that water, your fridge is going to preserve it. If you have something with germs on it, just like your food has a best before and use by date. Germs have a use by date too, but you want to wait until after the use by date before you use the germs. And if you're keeping your germs in the fridge, that's extending the life of the germs. You don't want to do that. Yeah, I know you want to extend the life of the food, but if you're extending the life of the germs as well, that's bad. So bear that in mind. Of course, a food labelling system doesn't allow for that because it doesn't allow you to put germs in as an ingredient. The germs are added accidentally afterwards, so they don't turn up in the labelling system. And as a result, there's nothing to say, if there's germs in this, do not consume until after the following date. By rights, you should have two dates. One date by which it's safe to use, all the germs will have died, and another date by which it's too late to use this food because the food will have expired. You'd have a window, a use window, instead of a use by date or a use after date. You'd have a use window. I get ripe in our home players in the online shop. They turn up, they're not ready to eat, and that's fine. We want them like that. We want them not ready to eat. We know there's going to be a window. 3 days from now, there'll be a window when they're ready to eat. And you just have to remember that they're there and cram them down your gullet during that 2-day window. And then after that, they rot. If you do that for pears, why would you not do it for your mouth? Your mouth is very important to you. It is. Tell me your mouth isn't important to you and I'll shut up and not say anything more about this. But you won't. You won't tell me that. You won't tell me your mouth is not important to you because you know damn well it is. Your mouth is one of the most important things you have. It is. Not only do you speak through it, you ingest stuff through it, you cough through it where you get rid of germs and the toxicants and things that choke you. You inhale through it. You inhale food through it and then that goes in, then you drink through it, and you spit through it, and then you vomit. Now, you may not like vomiting, but you do vomit through your mouth, and there were times when vomiting is absolutely vital. It'll save your life. One thing you don't do is have diarrhea through your mouth. People say you have verbal diarrhea. But we all know that's not the same thing. You don't have diarrhea through your mouth, and that's good. But sometimes you can have diarrhea and vomiting at the same time. And that's when your mouth comes in useful, because your mouth is like an overflow. The diarrhea just isn't enough, so your mouth works as an overflow. And that's useful as well. That might save your life one day. That might save your life one day. So don't poo-poo the idea of vomiting through your mouth at the same time as having diarrhea. You know how long it needs to be there before the germs are dead, I suppose. It's all very complicated, I know. It's all very complicated. Well, such is life. Staying alive is complicated. It is. Staying alive is complicated. You have to breathe every minute of every day, every second of every minute of every day, of every week, of every month, of every year, of every decade, of every century, of every millennium, of every eon, of every... you know, the whole thing, whatever's beyond an eon. What's beyond an eon? That other thing, the epoch or something. And then there's all time and whatever's outside of time. I suppose that's debatable. And we can't debate this on here because it's just me. We're never going to be able to debate anything because it's just a monologue. I feel bad about that sometimes. I'm just talking at you like I'm doing a lecture and you probably feel like you can't say anything back to me. Well, that's okay. I don't mind. I'm perfectly happy just listening to myself. Perfectly fine. Don't feel bad about that at all. Although if you do have anything to say, go to intoyourhead.ie/contact. Once upon a time, there was a dog. 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 A dog, 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 basically a dog. And this dog He was driving along the street one day, minding his own business, watching the world go by. I know those two things seem like opposites, minding your own business and watching the world go by. Well, no, he was being a passive observer. If a dog came to whatever hellhole country you lived in, as an international observer of elections, perhaps, and they sat there at the polling station and watched the vote and watched the count, but didn't interfere. That's the equivalent of what the dog was doing. He was watching the world go by, but minding his own business, in that if he saw something that he'd like to interfere in, he would say, is that my business or is it not? Of course, in the dog's case, the dog wouldn't be an election observer. The dog, in his case, is not an international observer of elections, and he hasn't been invited to be so. So to mind his own business, he would have to not say anything, but you can still observe. You don't have an expectation of privacy when you're doing something in the street and there's a dog walking by. You can't say, that dog is not, should not be looking over here. Tell that dog to avert its gaze. No. Dog is just as entitled to be there as you are. Some would argue that the dog is more entitled to be there. That species was there long before streets and publicly owned infrastructure ever existed. That dog was roaming the earth. Well, the dog or its ancestors was roaming the earth back when it was all just lava. It was all just lava. Now, obviously, some of the lava had cooled down by this point when the dogs started doing whatever they do. They didn't just live on a planet entirely covered in lava. At least we assume they didn't. The reason we know this is because we went to Mars and didn't find any dogs. There are people now who suspect that Mars was once populated by beings and we killed them all off or something, or some sort of a war. I doubt very much that there were dogs involved. If there were dogs involved, we would not have adopted them as man's best friend. We've said, you fuckers got us into an interplanetary war, you got a whole planet destroyed. Our next door neighbour's Mars there, we can't even look them straight in the face because we destroyed them, or caused them to get destroyed, and you dogs were involved. No, if dogs were involved, you wouldn't have adopted them as our best friend. In fact, many of us still haven't. I don't have a dog, I have cats. But no, there's a lot of people who have clearly decided, and presumably with good reason, that dogs are legitimate friends, and the dogs have decided that we're their friends too. So I presume, unless they're stupid or something, I don't know. Anyway, this dog, he's not there as an international observer, he's just walking along, minding his own business, watching everything, taking it all into his optic nerve, up for a spin around his brain. He allows these images and these perceptions to go up into his brain and around for a little Sunday drive around his brain and then out again, out the way they came in. Well, not out through the optic nerve. Thoughts just dissipate, I suppose. They don't have to go out through anywhere. They just dissipate. So that's fine. That's perfectly fine. That's not a problem at all. Disposable thoughts. A dog's thoughts are almost always disposable. It's not like he keeps a record. He doesn't sit down and write a diary every evening about all the stuff he needs to remember. He doesn't go, oh, that cat next door, I have to keep an eye on that cat. If you make a note of this in my, where's my glasses? First, he'd have to make a note of where his glasses were, and he's not going to do that. For one thing, he doesn't have glasses. Nobody got the dog glasses because nobody thought to check whether the dog needed glasses. In fact, not even once in the history of civilization, not even once has anyone ever gone up to a dog and say, maybe you need eyeglasses. No. We trained them to be guide dogs, but it never occurs to us that that dog might need, I may need a guide dog someday. Yeah, I hope they check the dog's sight first. They have some way of doing that. How do you check a dog's sight? I presume you go up to it and say, look, look over here, over here. And then you kind of wave your hand in its peripheral vision. See if it notices. I don't know. I presume they know what they're doing. People who do that, I presume they know that's a dog. That dog's well able to see. We don't need to test it. But how did you ascertain that it was well able to see? Well, we kind of showed it stuff and it seemed to see it. Had commented on it, not verbally. Are you going into your head? If you're listening to this in commercial helicopter. I'd like you to try the following, please, if you don't mind. It's a little experiment. If you're listening to this as the pilot of a commercial helicopter that does little tourist trips, for example, the one I went to in 2007 with my wife, just outside Cape Town, an ex-military helicopter with the doors open. I'd like you to try the following experiment. Try not being a fucking lunatic, if you don't mind, just to see if you like. You might find you make the same amount of money either way, and that will be an opportunity for you there, because you can continue in the same little business you've got going, but not be an absolute lunatic who scares the bejesus out of everyone. Most people have never been in a helicopter. They're going to enjoy it, whether you scare the shit out of them or not. Just have a nice little gentle drive in the helicopter. Point out the sights. Go, there's a cliff down there. I'm not going to point the helicopter down and dive into it because I'm not a fucking lunatic. I've realised this because I was listening to a podcast and this fella says, try not scaring the shit out of your passengers and see if you make the same amount of money. You do make the same amount of money. As people like me turn up there on holidays, like we say, oh, there's helicopter rides. We do a helicopter ride and then we go home to another continent and another hemisphere and we never go back again. It's not like you're looking for repeat customers. No, I don't, wait a minute. If you're running a ghost train and you want repeat customers, is it a good idea to not scare the living Jesus out of your customers? I suppose not. But they're looking to be scared. And they're probably not going to go back to the ghost train a second time anyway. Because they've been there, done that, done everything. You have 8-year-old children now. They go on some ghost train. That was great. You want to do it again and it'll say no. I've all done. My life is over now. I've experienced everything. I don't need to do that ever again. If I did do it again, I would just yawn all the way through it. That's a bit sad. I've done everything. I've done ghost trains. I've been in a scary helicopter ride driven by some lunatic who plays status quo. I've been to Disneyland. I've been to Morningtown, but I've never been to me. Is that a thing? I've been to something town, but I've never been to me. There was a cover version by a puppet in the 1990s, a turkey puppet. And he did a version involving Irish town names or something. I can't remember what the original song was. Could it be I've never been to me? I think it might be. Some woman bemoaning the fact that she's travelled all over her particular corner of the United States. She's going almost to the state border of wherever she lives, but she's never been to me. She's never looked inward. She's never successfully practiced meditation. Anyway, these ghost trains, you go through a curtain and then suddenly everything's dark, and as far as you can tell, you're still moving at breakneck speed. But as you know, I watch Air Crash Investigation a lot. And a lot of the time they say, if it's dark outside or foggy outside, the way a brain works, if the stuff on their dashboard isn't working, their indicators and dials, if they're not working properly and they can't see outside because it's dark or cloudy, they could be going anywhere. They could be up miles above the sea. They could be plummeting straight down towards the ground. They could be on their way up to the moon. They could be floating perfectly still like a balloon. They've no idea because their brain can't perceive that. So the same could be happening in a ghost train. I'd say when you go to a modern ghost train anyway, they're probably done by computer. You go in through the curtain and then everything stops. Things get dangled in front of you. Some screams come out of somewhere, but you're not moving at all. And then when it's time to finish, they just turn you around on some sort of a turntable, like they have on the end of a real train track in real life. At the end of some train tracks, they have a turntable. A locomotive drives onto it, someone pulls a lever, and it turns the locomotive around, and then it goes back onto the main tracks. I bet you that's the setup they have there. You're on this little fake ghost train. You go through the curtain, it stops. They do all this stuff for you that makes you think something's happening to you. Then they pull the lever, turn it around, and push you back out through the curtain. You're wondering, why am I facing the opposite way when you come out? That's why we don't let your child vote. They've gone into a ghost train and come out somehow facing the opposite way, and it never occurs to them to question that. You just go, oh, that's great. I gave you half of my pocket money and you terrified me. That's great. I just never want to do it again because been there, done that. What else is on my bucket list? You shouldn't be letting your child clear things off their bucket list that early on in life. Don't let them do a ghost train until they're at least 20. Going, oh, that's everything done now. There's another 6 long summer holiday breaks before I'm even finished school. But I've done the ghost train. I've learned how to swim and not drown. I've learned how to ride a bike. Hold some things back for them, for Christ's sake. Or don't hold some things back for them and then don't be surprised if they all end up doing drugs by the time they're 12. You'll only have yourself to blame. Do I sound like I've moved since the previous segment? I worry about that sometimes. I have moved. Between segments, I made some progress consolidating the clutter, so I was able to move this desk over a bit. And as a result, I'm speaking at a different angle than I was. So if it sounds different, it's not like one of those TV dramas where someone's wearing a different hat all of a sudden despite not having changed scene. It's okay, this is a different scene, so it's okay if I sound slightly different. This means I've moved that slightly over there and I've moved myself slightly over here and I'm facing more towards the door than the wardrobe. Some people probably worry about this stuff a lot. They say, I don't want people to know that I move or breathe or change shape. I don't want people to know that I'm a shapeshifter. Well, they won't if it's just audio. I know it's all the rage now to turn everything into a video. I'm putting stuff on YouTube now. intoyourhead.ie/shorts. Now with moving pictures. I have videos up there now with moving pictures. Not just moving pictures. Animations of myself in Microsoft Paint. People mock me for using Microsoft Paint. It's one of the finest programs known to man. And more importantly, I managed to learn it before I started going fucking blind. I open it up first. There's a glaring white screen that almost kills me. But I'm used to that. I just straight away open one of my black background pictures. And then it's fine. It's like putting on sunshades. I say, oh, thank Christ, it's one of my black background pictures of a matchstick cat. I can look at that comfortably. But no, if I were to learn anything other than paint now, you would not be happy with the results, I can tell you, because there wouldn't be any. But anyway, I've moved positions. I'm a bit more comfortable, despite being in a position that if I were to describe to you, you would say, Christ, that doesn't sound like a position anyone should be sitting in. It somewhat feels like I'm in an armchair, but I'm not. My left hand is resting on an electric radiator that's not even on the ground. Don't worry, it's not plugged in or anything. Got my leg resting against that. My other hand resting on a bottle of Coke. You Americans on your high school sitcoms and dramas, you always have the little desk attached to one side of the chair. How does that work if you're left-handed for one thing? I don't know. I know even less what happens if you're right-handed. Surely if you're right-handed and the little table is attached to the right side of your chair. I'm imagining doing it now. Not only imagining doing it, I'm making the motions with my right hand. I've never written anything with my right hand, but I imagine if I had a little notepad there on a little table attached to the right arm of the chair, the position I'd have to be in to hold a pen would be to twist my wrist to the right and then somehow try to write there. And then where would I rest my wrist? That table is not just floating in space. There must be something attaching it to the chair. There's probably some little bar or leg that comes along just to the right of your right leg to attach it to the chair. And that's going to get in the way of me turning. So if I'd gone to school in an American high school, I'd probably have ended up with permanent damage to my right leg. And why is your TV guide the size of a paperback novel? Do you think it's easier to hold or something if it's small pages but lots more pages? Or does it just feel more substantial? I suppose if you're someone in a supermarket who's into lists, maybe you like lists. You see, oh, that's a big list of TV stuff. Feels really substantial in my hand. 100 pages, even though they're small. But if you're into lists, then why are you grabbing an impulse buy? You're not really as much into lists as you think you are. You admire lists. That's what you do. You admire lists. You just don't have the energy or the ability to make one of your own for your shopping trip. If you did make a list of your own, you wouldn't have the TV guide on the list because you think, oh, I can make my own lists. I don't need that. Maybe you think that, but then you get home and you go, oh Christ, they don't have a list of what's on the television. Well, what you would do over here is turn on the television around 3 o'clock in the afternoon when the channel opens. You have a couple of minutes when they show a list of all the programs that are going to be on that evening, and you can take a photograph of that, and then you have that for the evening. You'll be okay then. Then a few years later, the world will all have changed, so don't get too worried about it. Nothing stays the same forever. A few years from now, it's going to be the 1990s, and you're going to have 50 channels. Then it'll be the 2000s, and you'll have 800 channels. And then the 2010s, you'll have no channels at all. Just people talking shit from 800 different places. Half of them are just in their spare room. The other half are in their majestic bathroom. You join me at a tremendously exciting moment. It's the closing segment to episode 840 of Into Your Head Podcast. Goodbye. Now, don't stop just yet. We're not done here. This is the beginning of the closing segment, the beginning of the end. It's like when you see your first grey hair appear. That's the beginning of the end, but it doesn't mean you're dead yet. You don't just go, oh, I'm done now. Bye bye, I'm off into my grave. No. For one thing, there's no legitimately licensed undertaker who's going to agree to bury you alive just because you have a great hair and you think it's all over. No. And we don't have a legalized having someone kill you in this country yet. We just have the long, slow decline towards death. And that's what the end segment of this podcast is. It's the long, slow declining to death. Except it's not really death. There's going to be another podcast after this. If it's not one of mine, it's going to be someone else's. Yeah, probably have a playlist set up. Go play something else after this. It'll be a nice surprise for you. You'll think, oh wait, it's just playing something else automatically. Oh, that's great. I wonder what it is. And while you're wondering what it is, the presenter of the next podcast will be explaining what it is, but you won't be paying attention. You'll be saying, oh, I wonder what this is now. You'll be drowning him out with your own thoughts. You'll never know what it is. You probably did the same with my show, did you? You probably heard me going, hello, coming up the following things, and you were just drowning that out with your thoughts. Oh, who's this fella saying hello now? I wonder what he's saying. I wonder what he's going to be talking about. Now, admittedly, I didn't do a thing where I go, hello, we're going to discuss the following things. There was a phase about 10 years ago where I used to come up and say, coming up on today's podcast, I'd make a list of things that were all true. They were coming up. It was meaningless drivel. Serve no purpose other than as an advertisement for the thing that you're already listening to. It's like having a blurb on page one of a book that you've already bought. Because almost, if you're listening to a book, it would be quite nice if the front page has endorsements from people all saying, you've made a good choice in book, well done. You should feel good about yourself. If you made a good choice, they're not endorsing the book, they're endorsing you and your choices. They say, oh, well done. Remarkable achievement. You managed to go into a bookshop where there was nothing obvious that would attract you. You just spent half an hour in the bookshop and you end up coming out with this book. And now you open it, you get to page one, never read it before. First thing you see is someone congratulating you and explaining why you've made a good choice. I suppose that's why they have forewords by people who are not the author. They're endorsing your choice and making you feel good about yourself. I suppose that's good somehow, maybe, I don't know. You wouldn't see on the front of a Stephen King book an introduction by James Herbert, who wrote all those other horror stories about rats and things. He's dead now, but when he was alive, he never found the first page of a Stephen King book. He never found a thing by James Herbert saying, oh, well done, you've picked this author, Stephen King, he's very good, you like that. A good choice, well done. How did you manage to find it? Did you look under a K? Did you not wonder why the K section was all out at the front of the shop in the big table out front? Do you think the left side of the shop goes A through J and the right wall of the shop goes L through Z and they just put all the K stuff on the table at the front? No, that's not how it works. The K stuff was out on the table and it was the first thing you stumbled upon, you fucking idiot. But you've already bought the book, so it doesn't really matter either way. And the same is true nowadays with audiobooks. You get an audiobook, you press play, and the first thing you hear is a prelude by some fella who's written another book that you might have read or you might not have read, saying, "I hereby endorse your choice of book by the fellow who's going to come on after me." Well, in that case, his voice is often being read by the same fella who writes the rest of the book. But he doesn't even do it in a different voice. Now, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. I'd like to see how one of these audiobooks handles an encyclopedia. Would they be doing the voices of each? You're supposed to believe that every article in that encyclopedia was written by the same author. I hardly think so. Maybe there was a time back 200 years ago when it would be possible for one author to write about every known subject in the field of science, because there were only about 3 science subjects at the time. But not now, no. There's too many. Look up all the science articles, and if they're all read by the same person, then that's fine. Get the same audiobook reader to read the whole thing. And then there's dictionaries. Suffice to say, no, you wouldn't want that. I think that's the end of the program, is it? It probably is. We'll find out in a moment, but I think that might be the end of the program. I think maybe I'll try feeding myself out. So instead of ending with some ridiculous nonsense or pressuring myself to end with a sentence that's clever or funny or interesting or a nice way to end, I'll just fade myself out. It'd be like you're listening to an audiobook as you fall asleep. You drift off to sleep and you have the sleep timer on. A well-designed app, anyway. It won't just stop suddenly when the sleep timer runs out. It'll fade out gently. Now, it doesn't usually fade in the music. Let's not worry about that. Fade out gently and I just slowly disappear into the ether. I get quieter and quieter and quieter and quieter and quieter. And the music for some reason gets louder. But it does end after a moment, so don't worry about that. Pretend the music isn't part of the experiment. The music is just an outside thing. The music is just something outside of the laboratory that you come across when you leave the sleep lab. You're in the sleep lab now. You're experiencing this program. The ending of the talk segment of this program is the experiment. It's going to fade out. And then it will just be gone. So, I had envisaged that it would be faded out by now, but I seem to have continued speaking. So let's try it now. Fade it out. Fade it out. We get quieter and quieter. My voice isn't getting quieter because I know I'm going to fade myself out technologically later. Gently. Gently she goes. Where it happens, nobody knows. Off to sleep. If you're driving, just...